This is part two of the story called The Heir. Please listen to part one first. In part one, we meet Wulrich, his personal banker Eustacio, and Eustacio is also his best friend. And we meet Carly Richter. Wulrich Otto Schneider is in Panama City to meet his heir, and he's 73 years old. He's a billionaire, and he wants to give his entire fortune to a storyteller, and he organized a podcasting conference to meet her. Part one ends when Carly Richter gets into the car with Wulrich and with Eustacio. They drive back to the hotel, and then Carly starts babbling. She does not know yet that she will inherit a fortune. For the first time in his life, Wulrich Otto Schneider sat in a regular taxi, a dirty one without aircon. It rattled while they drove. The window blew in warm wind. The car smelt of old smoke and fake lemon scent. The radio played. The German billionaire sat in the back seat of a yellow taxi with his heir, Carly Richter. It was the best day of his life. On the way back to Panama City, Carly babbled in the back seat. Wulrich sat next to her. Eustacio, she said, so sorry for leaving the podcast place without telling you. I tried to find you. You were gone. Eustacio said. Where did you go? Wulrich heard the anger in Eustacio's voice. Carly said, story collecting. I took a taxi to the old town and then I went to a tiny beach. She closed her eyes. I went where the locals go, and I sat. Two little girls swam. Their grandmother, she watched their every move. They galloped like little ponies. Out of the shallow water and the waves crashing, and they carried plastic cups to their grandmother to wet her feet. Oh! And they each had about six massive ribbons in their hair, which danced in the sea wind. Oh! The smell of the sea. The grandmother, she gave them each a toffee apple, the brilliant red type, the hard shell ones, and the shells cracked when they ate. And the toffee apples, it colored their faces and their bodies, and sand stuck to their red sugar. But on and on they went, collecting water to keep grandma cool and eating their toffee apples, and then the little yellow ribbons that hopped. Oh, the laughter from that grandmother, beautiful. It was a hard billow of a laugh. She thought they were so funny, and then she wiggled her toes. Carly Richter bedazzled the German billionaire. And Eustacio? He said, and then what happened? The most beautiful words for any storyteller. That night at the podcasting gala, Carly gracefully walked on stage and she received her prize from Wulrich. With dignity and with flair. No face paint, no twigs in her hair, no blood on her arm, and no rubber boots. She wore an elegant little black dress and she socialized marvelously well at the cocktail party. Wulrich very discreetly watched her every move. A little while before 8 o'clock, she came to Wulrich, thanked him for the evening and asked to be excused. I have a very important meeting, she said. Thank you for hosting such an impressive social event. Podcasters work so hard. Thank you for acknowledging the arts. Carly waited in the boardroom of a penthouse overlooking the Panama City skyline and the ocean. Millions of little lights danced on the water. A secretary had shown her in. She was early. Promptly at 8:03, the door opened. Wilrich came into the room and closed the door behind him. "Hello," Carly said. "You're also here to meet Kleber Industries?" "Nein," Wilrich said as he sat down across from her. A stack of folders lay to his right. "No, we are the only people attending."
I don't understand. Am I in the wrong room, Mr. Schneider?"
"Nein, no, he said. "This is your meeting." "I am Kleber Industries, Miss Richter." "I do not know where is the beginning. I'm afraid that you are going to be a bit overwhelmed by what I have to say. This may be too much. This is a... Wilrich stopped, at loss for words, anxious.
"It's all right," Carly said. "Don't be nervous."
She spoke as if he was a little boy with stage fright. Wilrich cleared his throat. He had actually memorized a speech for this moment. The podcast, I want to sponsor you. Your podcast."
"Really?" Carly said. "Sponsor? As in give me money on a regular basis for them then?"
"Yes," Ulrich said.
"Oh,"
she said, stunned, flustered, confused. Wilrich struggled to read her body language. "Will you tell me about the stories? On how you make them up? Where do you begin?" he said.
Carly said. "Nobody's ever asked me that. I start by going story gathering. I go out and I search for them."
"The story gathering? Searching? Stories hide somewhere like eggs under that hen?"
"Yes, exactly like that. Like today," she laughed.
"You find the stories today?"
"Yes," Carly said. "Oh, yes, I knew Panama would have wonderful stories."
Wilrich leaned in.
Tell the stories that you gathered."
"Well," Carly said, her eyes bright, and she moved a little bit forward. "On a square between buildings, I sat in an elevated gazebo. Older men danced with their granddaughters, and they had flat Panama hats on their heads. The men taught the little girls a traditional dance. It's done in a line." Carly closed her eyes, and she described the scene. She told about the strong smell of little oranges that everybody ate, the colors of the surrounding buildings, the nervousness of the little girls, the seriousness of the grandfathers, and their pride and their dignity, and their small graceful dance steps. A mother next to her in the gazebo, her eyes transfixed on one of the little girls, clapped the beat, counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, although the child could not hear her. The storyteller created an entire world filled with movement, music, vivid colors, birds and cats and pigeons, rats, emotions, fruit vendors, the smell of mangoes, trees with flowers, moving thin line clouds, twin babies in a cardboard box. "The one little grandfather," she said. He didn't really want to be there, I think. I think he had a great pain somewhere in his body. But the light in his eyes, as he showed the little girl the steps, and the music, I left that out. The men played on pan flutes,
and the little girls had shakers filled with seeds to keep the beat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, and the men, they wore red ribbons around their hats. Cuddly stopped. She opened her eyes. And then? And then what happened?
Oh, Cuddly said, this is not the story yet. It's just the stage. Later, a main character will come to me and tell me the story. And then after that, after I've written it, the twist will magically appear.
Oh, Ulrich said.
The twist?
Yes, there is always a twist. Wait, and I found another little tiny beach where no tourists go. I want to tell you about that, can I?
Yes, he said.
How did you find this in Cascavejo?
Carly laughed. I speak enough Spanish, terrible grammar, but I can get by. Anyway, there was this shy little boy, about 5. We played in the sea, and we gathered precious pieces of old porcelain. I made him a hat with sand, and we made a big dam that filled with seawater. And we swam and we swam in the waves.
She stopped. When she spoke about the child, a sad shadow dropped over her.
Then I found the woman in her yard. This is the story about the hen and the chickens. So this woman, her name's Dina, you met her at her house. She was singing to her hens. She held 6 yellow chicks in her apron, and her apron became a boat, and she very gently swayed the chicks back and forth. I sat with her, and she taught me the chicken song. It makes the hens happy, and they lay more eggs. Isn't that just astonishing? I climbed up the tree in her yard, and I found the entire story there, even the ending twist. That's marvelous. To find a full finished story, that's just magic. That's why I fell from the tree, excitement.
She abruptly stopped. Ulrich said,
tell this story?
Oh, no, Carly said. Then it will go away, it will vanish. I have to write it first, and then more magic will slip in. And then more.
Sorry, I can't tell you.
That is all right, Ulrich said. So tell me more of the story gathering.
Okay, Carly said. Just before I went to the hens in Dina, I actually went into a church. Half of it is a ruin. The walls are green. It smelled like wood polish, like my elementary school. Pure. In certain spots, the green plaster had fallen off, and hiding behind that, tiles. Glorious old colorful tiles with an intricate design. Hiding behind those green layers. Begging to be revealed. They're tiles from another era.
Then a man came in, she said. And she paused.
This man, he crawled to the front of the church on his knees, ever so slowly, praying. He bitterly wept. This was a sacred moment. He cried in agony. Again, Carly set the stage with brilliant descriptions of the finest of detail, what the eyes see and what the ears hear, touch, smell, color, emotions, and a very strong personal opinion. Ulrich relaxed for the first time that day. Her soothing voice washed away the clutter of the lawyers, the papers, all the clutter. He yawned.
It's boring, Carly exclaimed. You hate my stories. Nein, Ulrich jumped up.
No, I love the every word. For the 2 years now I have fallen asleep with your gentle voice. It sounds like the melody. Yes, the melody, really,
I'll always fall asleep before the end. Kari said, that's bad. They're not compelling. Too much description, I knew that. Too many details. If you fall asleep before the endings, nine, Vorich said. Brilliant the descriptions. I walk with you into the new world that you create. The beauty, I drift away and I dream the scenes. Cuddly interrupted. Why can't you sleep? She said. Ach, I have a complicated life, Vorich said. Tell me, she said. Vorich took a deep breath. I don't know where to start the story. He stuttered for the first time ever in his life. Oh, it's easy, Carly said. Tell all of it like a story, Mr. Schneider. Please, Nine, will you call me Vorich? Everybody calls me the Sir, Senor, Mr. Herr Schneider. Will you call me Vorich? Yes, she said. So tell just a normal story. I don't know how to do that. Gardley said, well, a story must be simple. It has a beginning and it has a middle and it has an end. Just that? Vorich said. Yes, but a really, really good story? It has that little twist in the end. So Vorich told her the story of his life, of a grandfather called Ferdinand, who made excellent glue. Glue for shoes. The glue fixed many, many a shoe, and then factories bought the glue to make more shoes and other things that needed to be stuck. Eventually, the glue stuck cardboard together and made boxes. With glue, this grandfather Ferdinand made a fortune. He bought land, lots, and he expanded. His son took over the business, made better glue, and he made even better investments. This rich family now owned property in 19 countries, houses and hotels and resorts and banks and buildings, airports and private planes and platinum and gold mines, and more. They hid some of their billions in banks in Panama to evade some of the tax. One grandson of the glue maker, called Ferdinand, lived in Berlin. He had 4 children and 6 grandchildren, and all of them lived in Germany. The younger brother never married, never had children, and nowadays spent most of his time in Panama. His name is Vorich, and he's 73 years old. Vorich is now tired of money-thinking business, of board meetings, and of traveling. He has a beautiful private island with white sands and palm trees off the shores of Panama. So he decided to give his family house in Berlin to his brother, the rest, everything else. He left to somebody else. Vorich retired and he is now a man of leisure. The end, Vorich said. Carly moved her chair closer and closer as he spoke. She interrupted him a few times with exclamations such as, really? Wonderful. Fascinating. Boxes? Better glue? And she clapped her hands when he said, the end. See, that wasn't so hard, she said. You told a story with a beginning and a middle and an end. Yeah, Vorich said. But without the twist at the ending, he said. It's all right, Carly said. Stories don't always need an ending with a twist. But the story has a twist, Vorich said, and he smiled like a child who finally learned to count all the way to 10. It has the twist. Oh, yay, the storyteller said, and she laughed. So tell me, what is the twist? Vorich sat back, and he threw his hands up into the air. The twist? The twist is, you are my heir. I, Vorich Otto Schneider, owner of Clever Industries, hereby give you the everything. Silence followed. Then Vorich pushed the pile of files to under her chin. There was a pen on top. And keys. He picked up the keys and they dangled in the air. Then he held up the pen and he said, "Start the signing." Carly sat frozen, staring at the files. "What is the key for?" she said. "Ah, there's a helicopter on the roof of this building, and this is your building. From this day on, I want you to fly." Carly stood up and then she ran away to the end of the room and then she turned away from him. She stared at the lights, the sea, the stars at Panama City. When Wilrich planned the speech, he knew that Carly would have some excuses or that she would say something like, "Oh, I can't accept," or "It's too much," or something like, "I have to think about this," or maybe, "You're joking, right?" Or, "Are you drunk?" Or maybe, she would say, "Is this a game?" He had answers memorized for each of those. She did nothing. She stood and she stared. And after a long time, she said, "But this simply marvelous story about glue to being rich. It's also filled with much disappointments, with jealousy and deceit, forbidden love, unfulfilled hopes and dreams, and much heartbreak. Things that millions and money can't fix, right?" "Yes," Wilrich said, flabbergasted by her insight. Her unexpected words crashed the neatly wrapped Kleber image like crystal, and the splinters pierced his soul. Everybody envied his fortune. Carly had explained the obvious truth hidden behind any empire. She explained the price of wealth. Wilrich sighed, and then he said, "My Namuti, my mother, she killed herself on my 18th birthday." He confessed, "Mein Vater, he had told her that he never loved her, that he married her for the money, for her money. She was richer than him." These words, they break her heart. Carly nodded. "I'm so sorry about your mother," she whispered. Then she suddenly stood up and took off her shoes. She climbed on the boardroom table, tiptoed to the middle. There she gave a deep curtsy to him, as one would do with kings, and she smiled. Wilrich did not move. Hardly blinked, petrified that even his hard breathing would make her stop. She pulled the elastic band from her ponytail and her dark hair tumbled onto her shoulders. "Okay," she said, "I'll sing you the chicken song, the one Dina taught me today after I fell from the tree. She said it made hens happy and it helped people in pain. Like you now, with the pain of your mother." Wilrich interrupted her. "Are you in the pain?" Carly quickly looked up. "Yes," she said. And then she put a fist to her heart. "But not from the tree fall. The pain is here where heartbreak lives. The pain is here in my soul where heartbreak lingers and festers. If I don't keep on singing chicken songs, if I don't keep on singing chicken songs, the great tragedy of my life, it will kill my soul." Wilrich knew her secret. He knew about her tragedy. So he did not answer. And Carly sang,
Malaria ya dari inga toshta toshta tilili hanga.
Carly's singing broke Vulrich's heart because she sang the song of a husband and a son who died in a car crash. Her 2-year-old son.
Ali inga dang tis tis ta turi turi tum ka pastra ha. Aita vari hangi am, buri buri bum ba patlali hey, chip 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 chip, aya aya, uli uli hum pa pai.
Her silence came quickly. Suddenly, she stopped, and she smiled and she said, "Thank you. Thank you, Vulrich." Vulrich nodded. He said, "I hope the money brings you the joy and the freedom. And it makes your wishes come true." Godly smiled.
Oh, I'm not thanking you for giving me money.
Nine, not?
No, Godly said. I'm saying thank you for loving my stories. And for sleeping because of them. Thank you.
Coming from you, it's such a compliment. It means more than kind words by other writers.
Vulrich sat up. Why? Because I'm the wealthy man?
The thought of that hurt him.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, goodness gracious, no, it's not that.
What's in? Vulrich said. It's about the man you became, Vulrich, despite being born a billionaire. It's about your beautiful soul, and despite all the silliness of too much money and worldly goods, I really like you, she said. The depth in you, the kindness and the compassion.
Vulrich looked away. He blushed. He sat at loss for words. For the first time in his life, really, nobody had ever given him compliments about who he was as a man. Never. His mother had seen him, but after that, nobody had.
Vulrich looked at the pile of contracts. This humble stack of papers equated to properties and funds larger than that owned by some small countries. He touched his worldly goods, as she had put it, and he left his hand there.
Carly smiled and she climbed off the table. Within a minute, she had her shoes back on and she sat upright. In her office chair.
So where do I sign? She said.
At that moment, when the storyteller signed the first legal document to become his heir, at that moment, Vulrich Otto Schneider deeply regretted his decision. The glue of Kleber Industries, that sticky money-making glue, it would surely taint this beautiful woman. He had said, I want you to fly. As if she had been the one trapped, the caged bird. As if she needed to be free. He grabbed the helicopter keys and he put them back into his pocket. And for the first time since his mother killed herself, he bitterly wept, without tears, no tears, but his chest trembled and shook. The lights in Panama City became dimmer with every legal document the storyteller signed. Dimmer and dimmer. Carly signed, one by one by one, and with every finished file, she lifted more weight off Vulrich's shoulders. One by one by one she signed, and with every one she set the billionaire free, free from his golden cage, so that he could fly. She signed so that Vulrich could fly for the first time ever.
This is the end of part two of a story called The Heir. In part three, Vulrich and Karli start their adventure together. And in part three, we hear Karli's story about her tragedy and her life. Because, of course, Vulrich had her investigated and he knew everything about her. And Karli's story, even more fascinating than Vulrich's.